A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents the Edward R. Murrow program with Don Hollenbeck. In hot weather, a lot of cars seem to grow sluggish all of a sudden. The reason? Sticky valves fouled up by gum and carbon. The remedy? Amoco 586 Special Valve Stem Oil. Your Amoco man mixes it with the gas in the tank. It flows to valves, clears up gum, carbon, varnish. You'll actually find an improvement in gas mileage, too. Amoco 586. That's the little thing that counts big in car performance. Your Amoco man is the only man who has it. And now here is Don Hollenbeck with the news.
Good evening. President Truman today used emphatic language in commenting on what he called slandermongers. He said America is defending itself against communism, but that the nation is under attack from people at home who claim to be anti-communists, but who are chipping away at our basic freedoms far more effectively than the communists have ever been able to do. The president named no names, but the remarks might as well have been labeled plainly, attention of Senator Joseph McCarthy of Wisconsin. President Truman's comments were made at the dedication of the American Legion headquarters building in Washington this afternoon, and he went on to say the slandermongers with irresponsible charges and accusations are trying to get us so hysterical that no one will stand up to them for fear of being called a communist. We must never, the president said, let this country come to the point where nobody dares stand up for his rights. We recorded the next observation of the president to this effect.
Yet this is exactly what the scaremongers, the hate-mongers, are trying to bring about. Character assassination is their stock in trade. Guilt by association is their motto. They have created such a wave of fear and uncertainty that their attacks upon our liberties go almost unchallenged. Many people are growing frightened, and frightened people don't protest. Stop and think. Stop and think where this is leading us. The growing practice of character assassination is already curbing free speech, and it is threatening all our other freedoms. I dare say there are people here today who have reached the point where they are afraid to explore a new idea. How many of you are afraid to come right out in public and say what you think about a controversial issue? How many of you feel that you must play it safe in all things and on all occasions? I hope there are not many, but from all I've seen and heard, I'm afraid of what your answers might be.
CBS White House correspondent Charles Collingwood tells me the Legionnaires gave a polite, if unenthusiastic, reception to the president's speech, and one of them commented, "I'm not sure the president's idea of a 100% Americanism is the same as the Legion's." The senator from Wisconsin was asked for comment. He said he'd welcome it if the president wants to make McCarthyism an issue of the 1952 campaign, and he went on to say, "It ill befits the president to try to protect the dupes and stooges of the Kremlin by using his office to attack not the facts, but whoever tries to bring the facts to the attention of the American people." The president's remarks followed another hearing by the Senate Internal Security Subcommittee, which is investigating communism in government. Today's witness, Elizabeth Bentley, self-admitted former communist spy who has previously testified before the House Un-American Activities Committee. She told the Senate group today that in Washington in 1943, she had managed to get agents in touch with affairs in the White House, the Treasury, and the Office of Strategic Services. In the campaign against communism abroad, a new campaign is aimed at getting the Western point of view over and behind the Iron Curtain, and it's been launched with some fanfare by the Crusade for Freedom, a non-government organization supported by contributions of 16 million Americans. The campaign also has the endorsement of organizations representing millions of others outside the Soviet satellite nations, and it takes the form of a balloon ascension. From Munich, 2,000 hydrogen-filled balloons up to 4.5 feet in diameter have been set off to float over and presumably down on Czechoslovakia, carrying messages phrased like this: "To the people of Czechoslovakia, a new wind is blowing, a new hope is stirring. Friends of freedom in other lands have found a new way to reach you. They know that you also want freedom." These balloons were launched at a ceremony attended by Harold E. Stassen, president of the University of Pennsylvania, and he said, "We have torn a big hole in the Iron Curtain. This is a new and additional method of reaching a prisoner with truth." Other messages say, "Millions of free men and women have joined together and are sending you this message of friendship over the winds of freedom, which, in the upper air, always blow from west to east. Tyranny cannot control the winds, cannot enslave your hearts. The leaflets, 2 million of them in this first launching, also carry the wavelengths and tuning instructions for the Crusade's radio broadcasts and for others, such as the Voice of America and the BBC. And to this extent, the venture does seem practical, but in other respects, it would appear to be somewhat impractical. It's undoubtedly a great thrill to let fly a 4.5-foot plastic balloon with some high-flown rhetoric attached to it, and imagine it bursting at 25,000 feet and scattering its leaflets to the earth, winning converts, confusing the opposition. But in point of fact, it doesn't work quite this way, and my opinion of this form of exhortation is shared by my CBS colleague Richard C. Hottlett, who, with others of us, had an opportunity to make a close examination of the way propaganda operated in World War II. The experience then was that most airborne leaflets of this nature were wasted. American bombers over Germany dropped from 40 to 50 million of them on a single raid without appreciable effect. And as Dick reminds me today in a cable from Berlin, the only concrete results that were achieved by this sort of operation were aimed at enemy fighting units by artillery. They thus achieved a high degree of accuracy. In addition, they had something very definite to say, usually an inducement in the form of a safe conduct into Allied lines if an enemy soldier wished to take advantage of it, and a good many of them did so. The leaflets devoted very little space to comments on the winds of freedom or the fact that tyranny cannot control them, as noble as these sentiments are. Only last Sunday, Hottlett tells me, he was watching the big communist demonstration in Berlin with millions massed to see the show or marching in it, a real concentration of the population. Under these most favorable of circumstances, balloons from the western sector were sent up to drop leaflets over the Russian zone, and Dick says by far the most of them were taken by winds away from their objective and fell to earth in the French zone where they did not apply. And one more lesson learned in World War II, which should be applied to the dissemination of propaganda, it's extremely unpleasant, uncomfortable, and downright dangerous to be found with one of these leaflets in one's possession. Himmler's police and the police of Vichy France were quick and efficient in their disposal of such material and of anybody who seemed to be too much interested in it. One can only suppose that the communist police of Czechoslovakia and other Soviet satellite nations are equally quick and efficient and just as ruthless in their methods. If the recipient of a leaflet stands to gain some concrete advantage, learn some really important development, perhaps he will run the risk of the rubber hose and the query room to snatch it up and look at it in the privacy of his home. He's not likely to be impressed by generalizations about freedom, and one can imagine no less likely convert, say, than a Czech farmer trying to till a field with the blades of his cultivator choked in the folds of a plastic balloon which has brought him a pep talk. This is not an attempt to belittle efforts to reach the people of the Soviet satellite nations in any way possible, and as for balloon-borne propaganda, occasionally one of them does bring a return postcard in reply from some Pole or Czech. But it would seem a far more effective way for the dissemination of information to this sealed-off part of the world to be by the radio facilities which are already in existence and can be stepped up, or by literature more carefully and more quietly directed to the places where it will count the most. A perhaps more effective reminder to the Czechs of our point of view was taken by Congress today. The House, by a vote of 362-1, voted in favor of breaking off trade relations with Czechoslovakia just as long as Associated Press correspondent William Otis remains in jail for espionage. He's been sentenced to 10 years. The resolution denounces Otis's conviction as a shocking violation of the fundamental human freedoms guaranteed in the United Nations Charter. The only member of the House who voted against the resolution was Republican Representative Wood of Idaho, and he said he did so only because it contained a reference to the United Nations, which he does not like. The resolution now goes to the Senate, where it will probably be passed, but it does not bind the administration to any course of action in trade relations with the Czechs. The Senate Post Office Committee today approved legislation which would provide a 4-cent rate for letters, 2 cents for postcards, increase airmail from 6 to 8 cents. It's not yet necessary to alter the contents of the stamp drawer. The bill has yet to be approved by Congress, and legislation of this type traditionally faces difficult going. The House today passed the big military construction bill, 5¾ billions, more than half of it for the Air Force, some of it for secret projects overseas. Before final passage, the House declined to eliminate a $19 million item for expansion of the Grandview Air Base in President Truman's home county. Air Force plans call for the use of Grandview as headquarters of the Central Air Defense Force and as an interceptor wing base. Tomorrow, the House begins debate on the nearly $8 billion foreign aid program. The Korean truce talks are still stalled. Allied commanders have now begun to hint at the possibility they may break down completely. General Ridgway says the UN commanders and negotiators will continue to be patient, firm, and reasonable, will continue to be so as long as the negotiations hold any hope of success, an implication that they may not or that there may be a time limit. Eighth Army Commander Van Fleet says if the talks collapse, his forces are ready and fit to take on the communists again in spite of their big buildup of frontline strength. William Randolph Hearst died today at Beverly Hills, California, at the age of 88. And although he'd been in ill health for the past 4 years, he continued to direct the editorial policy of his newspapers almost to the last. When President Truman fired General MacArthur this spring, Hearst dictated from his wheelchair the editorial of denunciation that appeared on the front pages of his newspapers, of which there are now 18 at the time of his death, in addition to the magazines and other enterprises. These will be administered by his 5 sons and present associates, and a spokesman for the family says the bulk of his estate will be left for religious and educational purposes. 12 years ago, that fortune was estimated at $200 million, but Hearst had to weather a financial storm in the Depression that saw some of the papers sold and consolidated, radio stations disposed of, many of his art treasures got rid of in department stores, and the publisher's own salary of $500,000 a year cut to 1/5 of that, with his enterprises put on a Regency basis. At the time of his death, Hearst again was in control, and since the day in 1887 when his father gave 23-year-old Willie the money to buy the doddering San Francisco Examiner, Hearst has been a storm center in American journalism, politics, and international affairs, the only publisher of whom it might be said that he started a war all by himself when he whipped up public emotion over the misbehavior of Spain and Cuba. And all the rest of his life, Hearst was fighting something or somebody with passion, violent in likes and dislikes, turning with fury on one-time favorites when they didn't measure up to standards. He got Franklin Delano Roosevelt the presidential nomination in 1932, but as the New Deal moved on, nobody could have liked Franklin Delano Roosevelt less than William Randolph Hearst, and that dislike extended to the present Democratic administration. And for that administration today, President Truman expressed sympathy for the Hearst family. Vice President Barclay saluted the publisher as one of the greatest journalists in history. This is Don Hollenbeck. I'll be back in a moment with a footnote to the news. Now, here is Bob Dixon.
Next time you drive past an automobile junkyard, notice how many of those worn-out cars are actually 1946, 47, or 48 models. Those late models are certainly too young to have been junked. What happened? Well, it's really what didn't happen. For often it's the old, old story of too little, too late. Too little lubrication care, too late to keep wear from getting the upper hand. Don't let too little, too late send your car to the junk heap before it's time. Take it to your Amoco man regularly for regular Amoco-approved lubrication service. He's an expert at a job like that, and he's got the specialized tools, oils, and greases to do the job right. He uses only Amoco-approved lubricants, each the exact grade specified by the design engineers who built your car. He cares for your car as if it were his own. He goes over it from bumper to bumper, services as many as 35 points the way they should be serviced. He sees to it that it gets the best. No wonder his regular care can add so many thousands of miles to the life of your car. Now here's Don Hollenbeck with a footnote to the day's news.
General Motors today followed the lead of Ford and Chrysler in taking steps to get a price increase of up to 10% on passenger cars. Price stabilizer DeSalle says he expects action on the industry's request in a couple of weeks. He adds he doubts that any car manufacturer will try to raise prices as much as 10% at this time, even if the agency permits it. And that's the footnote to the news.
If you've been running your car on an ordinary regular gas, try the one regular gas that's way, way out of the ordinary class. Try American Gas. It's the best of the regulars because it's made by Amoco and balanced in refining to give your car faster starts, smoother pickup, greater mileage. For American Gas, for all famous Amoco products, stop at the Amoco oval sign of greater values from Maine to Florida. Tune in to Don Hollenbeck tomorrow. This is the CBS Radio Network.